Lesson four of follow is the cost of discipleship. The cost of discipleship. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said, when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. That is not a very popular notion in today's Christianity. But is it true that when Christ calls a man, he actually bids him come and die? Well, I tend to think so. Because Jesus knows if he leaves us the way we are, we would never attain to the fullness of our purpose. So the first thing is that we must give up our own lives and then take up what he has for us. Dietrich Bonhoeffer went on to say that Christianity without the living Christ is inevitably Christianity without discipleship. And Christianity without discipleship is always Christianity without Christ. Can you imagine? People are calling themselves Christians, but Christ is absent from what they are doing. Imagine, Christianity without discipleship is always Christianity without Christ. That is tragic. To live in the assumption or the belief that I am a Christian, but I'm not following Jesus, that is what you call an empty shell. That is a hollow shell. So, by the way, who's Dietrich Bonhoeffer? Bonhoeffer was a Reformed theologian who was killed by the Nazis just at the end or towards the end of the Second World War. He was very outspoken against Hitler and the Nazi government, and then he was imprisoned, but he refused to change his position about Christ and about his beliefs, his convictions, and how the government should run. And because of that, of course, he attracted a lot of enemies. And eventually, he paid the ultimate price. He wrote a book titled The Cost of Discipleship, and I will encourage you to get it anywhere you find it. Now, following Jesus comes with a cost. Following Jesus comes with a cost. Anyone who says being a follower of Jesus is a smooth, non-demanding experience, then really isn't following Jesus. And we want to take a look at the scriptures to see what are the things that Jesus has said and how did he model the cost of being a true disciple. I take the first reading from Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10. And I will read from verses 34-39. Jesus said, "Do not suppose that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." What is Jesus addressing here? Jesus is addressing the cost of following him. He is saying that he has to come first. He is saying that on account of him, households will be divided. He is saying that on account of finding him, on account of discovering him, on account of people encountering him, they will make decisions that will pitch them against those who are closest to them. They will make decisions that will cost them their dearest relationships. That is a cost. That is a cost. In Luke 14, 25-27, Jesus looked at the crowds that were following him, and he made some demands of them. He said, "Anyone who wants to be my disciple must hate father and mother, must hate brothers and sisters, must hate wife and children, and even his own life also." That is a very stringent demand, don't you think? How can Jesus be asking me to hate the very people who have loved me, you know, all of my life? My parents, they've sacrificed a lot, put me through school, my siblings, you know, people that have been closest to me. Jesus is not actually asking you and I to hate them in the sense of the way we use the word hatred today. But he's saying that in comparison to our love and devotion, in comparison to our commitment to him, it would seem as if we hate them. In other words, we would so put him first, and then we will not put our parents, our siblings, our spouses or children second. There will be no second. There will be nothing close to our commitment to him. He would be absolute in our lives, so that when other people see the way we are treating them now compared to the way we are treating our relationship with Jesus, it would seem to them as though we have turned against them and now we hate them. That's what Jesus is addressing here. He's addressing the need for us to cut ourselves off from any relationship that supersedes our relationship to him. You and I need to sit down every now and then and take an inventory of the relationships that we consider dearest in our lives and ask ourselves, in the light of my own personal convictions about Jesus and my commitment to following him, is there any relationship in my life that I consider more important? It's easy to say no. It's easy to say Jesus is number one. But what happens when his opinion clashes with that of my parents or my siblings or my spouse or my children? When their plans for my life is in one direction, but his plans for me are also in a different direction. This is something for us to think about. Luke 14:33, Jesus talked about forsaking all. Well, remember, we're looking at the cost of discipleship, and Jesus is saying, unless you forsake all, you cannot be a disciple of Jesus. What does it mean to forsake all? Please note that Jesus did not say, unless you are willing to forsake all. He wasn't addressing the issue of willingness here. He wasn't addressing intentions. He was addressing actions. He didn't say, unless you are willing to forsake all, then you can't be my disciple. He said, unless you forsake all. There's a clear difference between the two. So it has little or nothing to do with our willingness. It has everything to do with our actual action, that we forsake all. That means that we hold on to nothing. That means that we give up everything. That means that actually we own nothing, and that everything that he permits us to have, we know it belongs to him, and that we can part with it at any point in time without batting an eyelid. So the cost of discipleship, we see in Matthew chapter 12 from 46 to 50, where Jesus was somewhere speaking to a large crowd, to a lot of people. Jesus was, we can say, he was conducting a conference. He had this huge audience that Jesus was speaking to, and the power of God was present. Jesus was teaching them about the kingdom. And then somebody came and told him that your mother and your brothers and your sisters, they are outside waiting to see you. They've come to have a meeting with you. I can imagine that Mary gathered the rest of her children, her sons and daughters, and said, let's go look for this, your elder brother. We've not seen him for months. We just keep hearing he's there, he's preaching, he has gone somewhere else, he's doing ministry. Which God is it that he is serving there? Is it that he can't come and preach right at home in this our village here? We've not seen him. Let's go and we hear now he's in a nearby town. Let's take advantage of his proximity and go and find out. We need to have a family meeting with him. Take note that Jesus was inside the building. His mother, his brothers and sisters were outside the will of God. And they came to interrupt the master as he was carrying out his assignment, his divine assignment. Jesus, when he received the notice that his mother and his brothers and sisters were outside demanding to see him now, Jesus did not take a time out. He didn't excuse himself from the crowd and invite, you know, one of the disciples and say, oh, you lead a 15-minute praise and worship session. Let me go find out what's happening, you know, with my family. No. Jesus refused to go. He looked at the crowd and he said, who is my mother my brothers and my sisters. And then pointing to his disciples, not the crowd. He was speaking to the crowd, but he pointed to the disciples. And he said, these ones who do the will of God, they are my mother and my brother and my sisters. So you see, Jesus had a different value system when it comes to earthly relationships. Did he despise his mother? No. Was he disrespectful towards her? Absolutely not. Was he looking down on his siblings? No. But he says doing the will of his father came before acceding to the requests of his family members. Of course, Jesus loved his mother. Remember that on the cross, just before he died, he handed her over to John the Beloved and said, Mother, behold your son. So he was even interested in her continued welfare even after he was no longer around. So it was not because Jesus disrespected his mother. He no longer wanted to have anything to do with her. Absolutely not. But it says, at this given point in time, the will of my father is more important than spending time with my family. The will of my father takes precedence over, you know, bowing to the requests and the desires of my earthly families. There are many, many, many people who would be doing the will of God today if their families had not talked them out of it. You remember that there was this particular person who wanted to follow Jesus, Luke chapter 9, but Jesus, he made one request. He said, let me go and say goodbye first to the people that are in my household. Jesus says, no, you are already looking back. That way you are not fit for the kingdom. You see, when you begin to consider the plans that your family has for you, and they are good plans, by the way. We're not here to say, oh, you abandon your family. But we're saying, can we follow Jesus to a point where he is more important to us than even what our parents say, what our parents think, and what our parents or anybody else wants for our lives, including what we want for our own lives? So Jesus considered more important than his own earthly family doing the will of God. That's a cost, because your family will now begin to think, well, now she thinks she's the only one who's born again, or he, because he knows one or two verses of scripture, he suddenly considers himself more holy than the rest of us. That is not the point. But when that happens, congratulations, you've just earned the badge of honor of being called a disciple. Not because you despise your family, not because you look down on them and want to have nothing to do with them, but you have decided to follow Jesus. And if your family members are not on board, if they have not checked in to the same convictions that you have, it would seem to them as though you hate them. That is a cost. That is a cost. It will attract persecution. You will be misunderstood. But that is the cost of following Jesus. Jesus himself warned us in John 15, 18 to 21, and later in chapter 17, verse 14. He said, these ones are not in the world. They are not part of the world. Though they are in the world, they are not of the world. Sometimes, in a bid to want to be accepted by our friends, our family members, you know, unfortunately, sometimes even some church members, we want to do what everybody wants us to do. We want to sound politically correct. We want to be accepted by all. But the reality is that our current relationship with the world is dead. It is dead. 1 John 2:15 says, do not love the world. We're commanded, that the world and God are totally in opposition. James 4:4, it says, he who makes himself a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. That's a cost to pay, because we want to belong, we want to be affirmed, we want to be appreciated by our friends, we want to hang out and fit in. But Jesus is saying, no. Anyone who wants to follow him needs to count the cost. And there is a cost for following Jesus. What is the cost for following Jesus? Everything. Everything. It will cost you and I everything to follow Jesus. It will cost us relationships. It will cost us opportunities. It will cost us reputation. It will cost us certain selfish ambitions that we have nursed for long. It will cost us, in some circles or in some quarters, it will cost us acceptance. Now, the question is, am I ready to pay that price? Am I ready to pay the cost of discipleship? That's a question we need to ask ourselves continually, so that we don't treat this matter lightly and just call anything and everything discipleship, when in actuality, Jesus is saying, if you really want to follow me, count the cost. Count the cost. Now, when you look at Philippians 1:29, 2 Timothy 3 verse 12, and 1 Peter 4:12-16, one of the things that will come clear to us is that suffering is part of the package of following Jesus. It's not something to be avoided. It's not something to run away from. Suffering or persecution or being misunderstood or being mistreated by other people who are not on the same pathway with you is part of what is expected. Sometimes we Christians, we treat suffering as though it were something strange, it were something foreign. No, it comes with the territory. Answering the call to follow Jesus is an automatic acceptance to take whatever comes with it. And all around the world today, many people are suffering for their faith. You talk about countries like Eritrea, countries like North Korea, parts of China, the Middle East, the Arab world, different parts of the world, even parts of Africa. Muslim or Islamically dominated West Africa and other parts of the world where the cost of following Jesus is your very life or could mean your very life. So these verses help us to understand that don't consider it strange when things like that happen to you. It's part of the package of total commitment to Jesus. Just recently, I was in one of the countries in the Horn of Africa, and I was interacting with people who were part of that country and other countries in the neighborhood. And they were telling me of stories, their own personal experiences with suffering and persecution. One young lady who's probably in her mid to late 20s, she had already spent 4 years in prison. At that age, she was thrown into prison in her late teens for preaching the gospel in her country. The only reason they let her out was because she was so sickly and she had lost so much weight that they felt, well, we don't want this one to die on our hands, so they let her go. But she confessed to me that it was while in prison for almost 4 years that she encountered the reality of the Holy Spirit. And she was telling me of several of her friends that they were in high school with together who are still in prison. She was telling me of relatives that are still in prison. Some of these people are put in metal containers and they are taken out to the hot desert and left there all day to roast, where your skin literally is peeling due to the heat, getting stuck on the metal container. And then at night, it's freezing cold. That is part of the price of following Jesus. Those of us in the free world, where we don't experience this kind of suffering and persecution, need to remember that we have to pray for those who are brothers and sisters in different parts of the world who are refusing to recant, refusing to change their convictions and their confession about Jesus. That is what Jesus has said concerning anyone who wants to follow him. Suffering comes with the territory. And you might be suffering in your own little way. I want to encourage you what Jesus said in Matthew 5. He said, rejoice and be exceedingly glad. He said, your reward is in heaven. In Revelation 6, we see that the martyrs were killed because of their faithfulness to the word of God. They weren't killed because people were not beheaded and stoned and sawn in two and thrown to the lions because they stole or they did something evil. No, their convictions about Jesus and his word earned them the badge of martyrdom. We see that the enemy can only be overcome based on Revelation 12, 10 to 11, the enemy can only be overcome when we do not love our lives even unto the death. If you read the preceding verses from verse 10, it talks about the accuser of the brethren. And then it says, they overcame him. Who are the they? We, saints, followers of Jesus. We can only overcome him by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of our testimony, and you see, the first two does not cost us so much. Of course, the blood of the Lamb cost us nothing. Jesus paid that price. And I hear a lot of Christians quoting this verse, but stopping with the second point. The blood of the Lamb, the word of our testimony. But he goes on to say, and they did not love their lives even unto the death. You see, that is what overcomes the enemy. When the accuser has nothing to accuse you about anymore. Why? Because you are dead. In other words, you didn't cling to this life. You gave it up. You were willing to suffer. And if need be, willing to die for Christ, the enemy has lost his grip over you. The enemy torments people with fear of death. But what do you do to somebody who has already died? Somebody who is not living for his own ambition. Somebody who is not trying to pursue comfort or convenience or anything for themselves. See, the enemy has no hold over that person. That person is dead. So it says there, they did not love their lives even unto the death. That's how they overcame the accuser. So let's embrace suffering. Let's not look for suffering. Let's not go seeking for persecution, but let's embrace it as part of the cost of following Jesus. Now, it's not all doom and gloom. There are things that Jesus has promised to those who value the kingdom above everything else, including their families, their possessions, their personal ambitions, and even their lives. There are things that Jesus has promised. The first thing we see in Matthew 6:33 is that Jesus says that all these things will be added unto those who put the kingdom agenda first. What the king wants is always more important than what I want. So what Jesus said in the garden must remain a permanent and constant prayer. Not my will, but yours be done. Not my wishes, not my plans, not my ambitions. Let what you want be done. And if it requires that I die for what you want to be done, so be it. That's how kingdom citizens think. That's how disciples live. But the good thing is that Jesus says all these other things that people seek after, he says it will be added unto them. The question is, do I believe Jesus? Do I trust him? Do I have a living faith that what he said he will do, that he will add unto me the things that others are running after, those things will not be the pursuit of my life. And then we can go on. We'll see the other things that Jesus said there regarding the benefits and the blessings, the promises to those who give up everything. In John 12, 25 to 26, Jesus says, whoever serves him, they will be with him where he is. Can you imagine such an honor that you are where Jesus is? You have access to his personal presence. Not only that, you are elevated to a status that others are not privy to because you've chosen to serve him. And then he goes on to say that my Father will honor him. See, many of us want honor from the Father, but we are not ready to give up our one seed. In verse 24, Jesus had said, except a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it abides alone. But if it dies, it produces much, much, much more fruit. If I give up my one seed, Jesus says the Father will honor me. The path to honor from the Father is giving up my own life, not holding on to it, not clinging to it. So there are promises for those who value the kingdom, who value God's agenda, who value what God wants above their own family, above their possessions, their personal ambitions, their safety, their own plans. People who put God first can never come up last. It's impossible. Let me ask you, what do you think would happen if the church today on the earth and every believer puts their allegiance to and pursuit of Jesus above family, work, money, possessions, position, ambition, and pleasure? What would happen if every believer you know begins to prioritize Jesus and his agenda above what they want? And then we need to ask ourselves, What are the things that may be holding you and I back from such abandoned devotion? What are the things that may be hindering us from plunging our lives completely into that which is God's prime agenda? Now, the cost of non-discipleship, the cost of not following Jesus like that, is always higher than the cost of following him. If we consider that the cost of following Jesus is too high, I invite you to check the cost of not following. It's always higher. In time, it is higher. You will pay the price of going it your way, paying your own fare, struggling through life, wondering about life, and then even in eternity. Just imagine the cost of not abandoning ourselves to Christ. It's too high. It's too high. The cost of following is much lower than the cost of not following. It cost Paul everything. He reeled out his pedigree and he says, those things that were gain to me, I count them as loss. It needs to cost us. And we need to stay conscious of the times when Jesus may be requiring you to give up certain things in your life and then pay the price. Pay the price. A disciple is one who puts Jesus first. Let's keep that in mind. A disciple is one who puts Jesus first. And there are many people all over the world who are doing that at great risk, at great price. There are more people being martyred in the world today than at any other time in history. In the last 100 years, more people have been killed because of their confession of Christ than in the previous 19 or 20 centuries after the church was born. So we thank God for organizations and ministries that are ministering to such people, that are reaching out. And examples are like Open Doors. There's another organization called Voice of the Martyrs. There's another organization called Stephanos Foundation. There are several of them around the world, and they are doing a great job. And they need to be encouraged. They need to be prayed for. They need to be supported, because people are paying a cost for following Jesus. We need to be very conscious of these realities, because we cannot claim to be disciples when we try to walk the path of self-preservation, when in reality we have been called to walk the path of self-sacrifice. Let me ask you, my dear friend, what has it cost you so far to follow Jesus? What is it costing you, and what will it cost you? I often like to tell people, a Christianity that costs nothing is worth nothing. A Christianity that costs nothing is worth nothing. Unless I am ready to pay the price for following Jesus and go all the way, unless Jesus becomes such a priority to me that it begins to cost me the relationships that are dearest to me, unless I am willing to go all the way with Jesus alone, then there is no way that I can call myself a true disciple. As we conclude lesson 4, I want to encourage you to find time by yourself and do an inventory of the things that you have in your life, the relationships, the plans, the ambitions, the ideas of what you want for your life. And ask yourself, if I want to follow Jesus and go all the way with him, what am I going to give up? What is being demanded of me? What is being required of me to give up so that I can walk this path that is less traveled? A path that is less traveled. The multitudes will always choose the path of ease and convenience and self-preservation. Disciples will do whatever it takes to please the master, and in the process find that their every need is catered for, because Jesus is faithful. Jesus is faithful. We bring this particular lesson to a close. I encourage you to tell several of your friends, share with them what you have been learning. Memorize Philippians 1:29 and share with somebody for the sake of accountability. Spend some time in prayer. Pray for persecuted believers around the world. Bear their burdens with them. And then pray for yourself that you would be a true follower, a true disciple of Jesus.